microwaved coffee.
I Not tried that much. Ice cream that Karen told me to try.
And?
Oh, yeah?
Verdict?
It was okay.
Yeah.
It has hints of the Haagen-Dazs coffee ice cream flavor.
Uh-huh.
Followed by the, oh, that's sugar-free taste.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, but it was better than I thought it would be, so.
Yeah.
I'm glad about that. Saying that, though, I've only had one scoop of it, so.
Oh, okay.
I think it's because I also got vanilla ice cream and root beer, so I was trying to eat that first.
Oh, okay.
That sounded way better. It wasn't too bad. I forgot the brand already. Enlightened or something?
Yeah, so you told us last time. I think it was Enlightened. We went to the dog park and I met a pig. It was very exciting.
Oh, yeah, I saw the picture.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what?
That was so cool.
You gotta love Bonita. You got all those animals and like random farm animals around here. It's the best.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. And like the guy, he has two. And he also has like a goat. And he like sometimes will take the goat on like errands with him. It's really funny. Like he says he'll go to the store, he'll go to like Walmart or something and just like tie him up outside. And I was like laughing because I'm like, out of all the places, Walmart would be the place to have a goat outside. So
get him on a leash, huh?
What was the name again?
His name is December. Yeah, December.
December.
When I read that, I just thought of Parks and Rec when Andy writes the song November.
Yeah.
And he's like, that was for April.
It was Diciembre, and the guy was Mexican, but I was like, oh my god, he's so cute. But, yeah. That was a highlight of like my summer.
Yeah. What does he have the pig for? Just like as a pet? Like he literally.
Yeah, he has two of them, like just pets.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And he had it like on a leash and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He was so cute. He was just like going around. Apparently he loves a dog park, but yeah, it was really funny. I was like, what was that first time like?
Yeah, you know, I know, right?
Like, let's take him to a dog park. What's gonna happen?
Were the dogs like, the hell is that?
Are pigs allowed at a dog park? Yeah. Technically,
no, that is a good question.
I mean, I don't care at all
if
pigs are there, but I'm just saying, like,
yeah
he's not a dog, he's not allowed.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
So funny.
I'm gonna Google it right now.
I mean, they're not allowed. Like, there's nothing out there that says dogs only. So you could, like, technically get away with it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. It doesn't really say. I mean, it's called a dog park, but it doesn't say, like, only other pets not allowed. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was, pretty much the highlight of, like, my year. But...
I went to Monterey Bay.
Yes. And you had your burger?
The burger.
I had the burger. Yeah, still good.
Nice.
Yeah, still good.
Vanessa had a fried chicken sandwich, and that was really good too.
Mm-hmm.
The burger, what I was telling Vanessa about that burger is, I think it's called like Honor Bar is the place. But like the burger isn't like the best burger I've ever had in the world. It's just, it's really good, but I like that like every bite tastes the same. And I feel like when you go to other places, it's not like that. Like you just get flavors. Like this one, I don't even like pickles, and this one has pickles like all the way through, and it's like you could taste everything, like all the flavors mix in well together. It's just like perfectly built. The bread's good. Like, you could tell they make the bread, and just everything's really good.
What kind of bread? Is it just, like, a regular burger
bun? Just, like, a sesame, like, regular burger bun. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the meat's, like, perfectly cooked. It's, like, a really high-end restaurant. So, like, when you order the meat, like, medium well, it comes medium well. Like.
Yeah.
So, it was good. And went to Big Sur. Took pictures, had to go around the long way because the one, well, I guess the one is the long way, but the one is like the way you want to see it. But I had to go around.
Fires?
Through Monterey because there was a fire, yeah. So I didn't get to drive. I've never driven down the one like all the way to like San Francisco or something, or I know you can go all the way to Seattle, but
yeah,
which is what we wanted to do, and it kind of sucked that there was a fire, but it was okay. I went to a racetrack, which I've always wanted to go to, called Laguna Seca. Always wanted to go to since I was little, and we went, and it was cool. And Vanessa was like covering her ears because it was so loud.
Yeah.
And I was like a little kid at Disneyland.
I'm just picturing Vanessa cover ears like all dramatic and pouty. Like,
yeah, yeah. She's like, I hate it. Yeah, why does it have to be so loud?
Oh my god.
It was so funny. But yeah, it was cool. I took pictures.
Is that like you guys just went for, you just wanted like a drive?
Yeah, usually when we have time off, we usually take a long drive. And this was the longest I think we've ever done because basically it took all day. Like woke up early Saturday and then went to LA. And I showed Vanessa around like where I grew up. And then we went to eat, and yeah, we had breakfast there. And then from there, we started driving up, but then we started getting mixed information about like the one being closed. And then, so we decided to take the one as far as we could. And there was a sign basically when we got to one of the freeways, like the 48 or something like that, that said like the one closed, like, I don't know how many miles, and there's no detour. So, like, I don't know what people were... Like, I guess you would have to just come back straight down and then go around. Mm, so yeah. We basically took the 48 all the way around up to Monterey, and then we had a hotel in Monterey, so we just spent the night there. Because by the time we had to go around, it got, like, late. And then in the morning, we had breakfast at, like, a little coffee shop that was there, and like they have like their own Fisherman's Wharf. I think it was actually called like Old Fisherman's Wharf or something. Like kind of saying like we're the first ones, not the other. OG. Then we went down the one all the way down to this thing like that's called like the Otter Reserve or something, but we didn't see any otters. And then we went to like Bixby Bridge and basically just stopped at a bunch of little spots down the one and then came back.
Nice.
And then what did we do? Oh, yeah. Then we went to Santa Barbara to have the burger. And that's it. Went to Gajan's. Gave me some rice. Super happy.
It was really funny because you were asleep and it looked like when kids come back from Disneyland. And I was like, oh, he got his burger and he's like asleep. He's
dude, I drove like probably more than 24 hours. So I was like exhausted, you know, because like we woke up, we left here like at 7:30 and we didn't get to Monterey till 8.
Mm-hmm.
So like 8 p.m. So from 7 in the morning to 8 p.m., you know, that's like 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then the next day we drove around. I mean, we woke up pretty early again and we were driving around. And then we didn't get to your house till like midnight, right?
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
So like I drove all the way from Monterey to Santa Barbara. No, I drove all the way to the rest stop in San Onofre.
Oh.
And then by that point I was like, dude, I'm like, my arms were hurting from driving. Mm-hmm. And I told Vanessa, I was like, I don't think I can drive anymore. I was like, we're going to have to switch. And she was like, okay. And then I like sat down in the passenger seat and I was like, I think I'm going to pass out. And she was like, okay. And so she put a podcast on. I passed out. And then I don't remember
what happened.
Yeah. Until I got home, I was like, well, we're home. She was like, yep, you were out.
Sounds relaxing.
It's kind of like you don't want to go out. It's so fucking hot.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It was nice today.
Yeah, today was nice. Mm-hmm.
It is starting to get a little hot right now, but I don't know if it's because I closed the door to the room so the sound doesn't come in.
Yeah, well, there was it went up to like, I think it's around 80 today. It's supposed to be like the high, but yeah. Yeah, not looking forward to this weekend, but hopefully it'll go away soon.
It's sad that Chadwick passed away.
Oh, yeah. It's, I always...
It was Friday, right?
Yeah.
Is it Friday? Yeah.
Friday or Saturday.
Saturday.
It was. Yeah,
we were on the road when it happened.
It's always a bummer, like people who die. Like when I hear somebody who died
at so
the age of 80, yeah. I'm like, oh man, that's a bummer. Because now, you know, nowadays we can live a little longer, but it's just like, gosh, that's so sad. He's so young.
Yeah, and he didn't tell anyone. Just his family knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
How he was like filming, like Black Panther and stuff, doing all that stuff, and he was going through chemo.
All those stunts and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think I had seen anything with him aside from Black Panther, and then I realized I have Marshall. Like I have the movie, I just haven't seen it. Like I bought it a long time ago, I just never saw it. So I was like, oh, that was my plan, was to watch it, over the weekend. But then I'm almost done with Boardwalk Empire, so I was like, I'll watch it.
Binge watching.
Dude, so I'm watching Boardwalk Empire, and they got this kid to play. Well, he's not a kid; he's like our age, I guess. But in the show, he looks like a kid. But they got him to play a younger version of Steve Buscemi's character, and the casting is unbelievable because you almost swear like they did special effects on this guy to, you know, like did special effects with like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah,
just made him look younger. But this guy looks exactly like, it's really crazy. I'm like, wow, that's good casting.
This is Microwave Coffee, and I'm Ivan Ortega.
And I'm Kishan Sendi.
And I'm Justin Park.
So yeah, so based on Chadwick passing away, I decided to do my topic on Jackie Robinson.
On movie. Oh, yeah, he was in that movie.
Yeah, he was in the movie. The movie's called 42.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jackie Robinson's number was 42. So this is going to be a short one. probably not. There's a lot of info. I had to cut down a lot. I actually did when I was in elementary school, did a report on Jackie Robinson.
I think I did too. I think a lot of people did, maybe.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did when you're little.
Yeah.
You like baseball. Mm-hmm. I used to have like this really big book that had like the history of baseball. It was like the biggest book. I don't know. It was huge, and it just went over everything. So I don't have it anymore. I don't know where it is. My mom must have it or something, but either that or it was donated. But anyway, Jack Roosevelt Robinson was born in January 31st, 1919. He was an American professional baseball player. He became the first African-American to play in Major League Baseball. This is kind of like up for debate because there was another guy who played. Name was Moses Fleetwood Walker. He's actually credited as being the first black person to play in MLB. But Jackie Robinson's the first one to play in the modern era, which I believe had rules against black people playing. So the rules changed sometime after Moses Fleetwood Walker played, which is why a lot of people believe Jackie Robinson is the first one, but he's more like the first one of the modern era. So he's actually like the first one to cross like the racial line or whatever after all these like rules were set. So he was born in Cairo, Georgia. He was the youngest of five children. His middle name was actually in honor of President Theodore Roosevelt, who died like a few days before Jackie Robinson was born. His father left the family in 1920, and his mom moved everyone to Pasadena, California. Yeah.
I know where that is. I've been there.
Yeah.
Once or twice.
Yeah. In 1935, Robinson entered high school, and his brothers, Mac and Frank Robinson, basically persuaded him to keep playing sports because they saw how good he was. His brother Mac actually won a silver medal at the 1936 Summer Olympics. I didn't look up.
These are like all born athletes.
They're just like, well, when you see he played varsity football, basketball, track, and baseball, like all through high school. He played tennis, but he wasn't varsity, I think. But he did win junior boys single championship for the Pacific Coast Negro Tennis Tournament while he was in high school. So even though he was in varsity, he still won a tournament. He earned a place at the Pomona Annual Baseball Tournament All-Star Team, which included future Hall of Famers Ted Williams and Bob Lemon. If you know baseball, those are like pretty famous names.
Mm-hmm.
After high school, he went to Pasadena Junior College, where he played the same sports, football, basketball, track, and baseball. It looked like he, like, from what I remember and from like what I was reading, played a lot of football, and he actually hurt his ankle while playing for Pasadena Junior College. And that's important because later it like comes up. He won the Mast and Dagger Award, which was given to students whose outstanding service to the school and scholastic and citizenship record is worthy of recognition. That's like what the actual award says. He was part of the Lancers, which was like a student-run police for the school. They like patrolled and kind of took care of everything, and he kind of, this is kind of like where he starts getting in trouble a little bit, because he was very vocal about like racial things that would happen at the school. And one time his friend was being arrested, and he was being vocal to the other cop about what he was doing. I guess his friend was just being arrested for whatever racist thing they wanted. So he, I think he got suspended from the school for like a few months, so he couldn't play during that time. But he, after that, he just continued to play. And when he graduated, his like his last year, I think, there towards the end, like right when he was about to graduate, his brother died in a motorcycle accident. His brother had a family, and he decided to go to UCLA to kind of stay close to the family. In UCLA, guess what? He also played football, basketball, track, and baseball.
That is so crazy.
Tennis.
Yeah, and no tennis. I think after high school, it didn't say anything about him playing tennis anymore.
Okay.
He was, I believe, one of four black players at UCLA football team. At that time, there wasn't that many black players across the country for big football teams that played in like mainstream football. That year, the football team, they went undefeated. They went 6 and they had 4 ties, so 6 wins, 4 ties, like no defeats. At the school was where he met his future wife Rachel. I think you say her last name Isom. He later married her, and she's still alive. She's 98, I think I saw, 98 years old. She was like a registered nurse. She went to college in like, well, she went to UCLA and then went to a school in New York to become a registered nurse. And she became like a professor too and stuff like that. He quit college. He quit UCLA right before he was about to graduate. And he took a job as an assistant athletic director for the National Youth Administration. Later, the government like ceased all the National Youth Administration's operations. So he basically lost his job, traveled to Honolulu, and joined a semi-professional team, racially integrated Honolulu Bears. I don't know why it's worded.
What deal was that?
Typically, but anyway, he joined them and then returned to California in 1941 to join the Los Angeles Bulldogs of the Pacific Coast Football League. So he basically went from like league to league that would allow black people to play, because at that time it wasn't very like, I don't know, they wouldn't include black people. And in some sports, I think they were blatantly like in the rules, like no black people. Then at that, like a few years later, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. So Robinson joined the military. He was assigned to cavalry in Fort Riley, Kansas. But he and a lot of other black soldiers applied for admission to an officer candidate school. At that time, the guidelines basically said that it was race neutral, like it didn't matter what race, to be admitted to the school, but there were very few Black people admitted. So even though the rules didn't state like you couldn't be, they still wouldn't accept that many people. So he actually got accepted, and once he finished, he got reassigned to Fort Hood, Texas, where he joined the 761st, the Black Panthers Tank Battalion, which I don't know if they taught you guys this, but in school they taught us, like, they were, these guys were like the first Black like battalion that saw combat, because back in the day, they had rules where Black people couldn't see combat. They could join the military, but they couldn't, like, fight. They could, a lot of them were assigned to, like, fixing things or, you know, making weapons, things like that. So in July 6, 1944, they kind of halted his career in the military. Like, he couldn't do anything because they were doing results on his ankle that he had injured in junior college. So I don't know if you remember, like I said, that he was playing football and he hurt his ankle and he was injured for a while. When he joined the military, I guess they found out he had an injured ankle, so they ran a bunch of tests. So they basically like didn't let him do anything or join the battalion. And he was going to go visit like a friend somewhere. So he had to board a bus, like an army bus. And the bus driver told him to sit in the back. And he refused to sit in the back because there were no rules in the army for Black people that, like, that Black people needed to sit in the back. The bus driver didn't fight him on it. But when they arrived at the next stop, he called over military police officer. And they arrested Robinson.
The bus driver? And,
No, they have, like, their own police. Okay. When you go in a military base, they have their own
military
police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they went. They arrested him. They arrested Robinson. And then they actually, the guy who was investigating the crime, I guess, Robinson started to confront him about being racist and giving him racist questioning. Basically, that officer suggested to the military that Robinson needed to be court-martialed. Like, one of the things was that he said was that he was drunk, even though Jackie Robinson didn't drink. And so, like, that was BS. Later, he was basically acquitted. Like, he was charged with two other things that were also BS. Like, basically, they could see that it was all like none of the stuff was true, but they still charged him with two things. And then he was acquitted and he was reassigned, and basically they made him like the Army's athletic coach. So after that, it's kind of dumb.
Not completely.
Yeah, but they didn't kick him out, but yeah, they basically were like, you're an athlete, here you go, be a coach. And then after that, he was discharged honorably in 1944, which sucks because joined, you know, when the war happened and he didn't actually get to go fight, and the battalion he was in was one of like the first Black battalion to see combat, the Black Panthers or whatever.
Yeah, was that just in the US, do you know?
I don't know, probably.
Cause
I feel like we're always the last ones.
Yeah, I'm just wondering because, like, I know that song. I know, like, Bob Marley's song, Buffalo Soldier, is about that.
Oh, but really?
It's about, yeah, because they used to move the Black soldiers to the front so they would get killed first.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was, yeah. That was before, yeah.
Oh, it was before. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we used to do that in the Civil War. I think we did that in the Civil War. Like, where we put
older ones.
Like, yeah, at that point, I think we didn't have lines, like, really, like, where, how, like, in World War One we would send lines of people fighting. By World War Two, I'm pretty sure we weren't fighting in lines. It was more like, you know, get your ass up that hill and
yeah,
and fight. But this was a tank battalion, too, like, so they ran, it was like a little platoon of people with tanks and stuff. So, but they were like the first ones to see combat in like a modern era, I guess. Same thing.
You didn't get to do that.
Yeah. They weren't allowed to. And then all of a sudden, well, I mean, I guess they kind of had to, right? Like,
yeah,
get to use everyone we could. So, yeah. So anyway, after he got discharged in 1944, he went back to LA to play for the LA Bulldogs. While he was there, he got an offer to coach to become like a coach for a school in Austin. He was contacted by the same like friend that he was going to go see when he got arrested. The friend was like a priest or something that basically he would go to a lot for advice and stuff like that. So anyway, he went to go play there or coach there, and in 1945 he got an offer from the Kansas City Monarchs to play baseball in the Negro League. He accepted the offer and he got paid $400 a month in 1945.
That's a lot, right?
Yeah, that's a bit. I mean, especially for a black person, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He didn't really like the Negro Leagues because they weren't like really organized, and they also accepted gambling from like anyone basically. So he was like anti that, you know. He was like a Christian guy, didn't accept that. And then all the other football leagues he had been in were like well organized, and this one wasn't, so he didn't like it. So he only played 45 games, and he had a hitting average of 387, which is really high in baseball. Like anything over 300 is really good. He had 5 home runs and 12 stolen bases. At that time, he was getting like basically scouted, and he was getting offers from Major League Baseball teams. So he tried out for the Boston Red Sox. The tryout was a farce, though. It was designed to basically, it says here, designed to assuage the segregationist sensibilities of powerful Boston city councilmen. So basically they did it to make fun of him. They didn't let anyone in the stands. It was limited to management. So basically he left. He was subjected to racial slurs and stuff like that, and he left humiliated by the Boston Red Sox. And 14 years later, in July 1959, the Red Sox became the last major league team to integrate black people to their roster. The Brooklyn Dodgers, however, began scouting the Negro Leagues for a possible addition to their roster. The Dodgers were co-owned, so one guy, Branch Rickey, he was the president and general manager as well. He basically really wanted Jackie Robinson as a player.
The only ones, like, out of the big teams, were they the only ones, like, recruiting black players?
No, there was I guess at that time they were kind of looking at the Negro League as like they were looking for potential candidates. But so the Dodgers weren't the only ones scouting Jackie Robinson. There's other teams, but there was like a famous discussion between Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson. On Wikipedia it says it lasted 3 hours, but I don't remember if that is accurate or not. But they did talk for a while, and basically the conversation, he wanted to sign him, and basically he questioned him and asked him if he would not fight back, basically. Like, if he was going to be able to still play, because any team, any place or city that they go to, you know, he's going to get yelled at, they're going to call him names. They're like, he was going to face all these things if he became a player. And based on his past history with law enforcement and the military, you know, they were basically like asking him, are you going to be able to stay calm? Robinson, like, this is like, these are like famous quotes, like where he asked him, are you looking for a Negro who is afraid to fight back? And Rickey replied, he's looking for a Negro with the guts enough not to fight back and turn the other cheek. At the end of that conversation, Robinson agreed to sign for the Dodgers, and he signed for $600 a month, which is equal to $8,521 today. Like, it says today, but I think it's 2019. He didn't get to play for the Dodgers right away. They actually sent him to the minor leagues. So in baseball, same thing like in soccer, they have teams. I think in hockey they do this too. They have teams in minor leagues where they basically have like reserve players. So a lot of times players in the minor, like, you'll, if you're good but technically not good enough to be in the major leagues, you'll sign to a minor league team with the hopes of moving up to their like sister team or brother or whatever, like their parent team or whatever. So, for example, the Brooklyn Dodgers also own the Montreal Royals, which is where Jackie Robinson played after he signed with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And, like, so, as a reference, the Gulls here in San Diego is a hockey team. And they are owned, basically, by the Ducks, the Anaheim Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, sometimes players from the Ducks or from the Gulls will go play for the Ducks when there's, like, an injured player and stuff like that. So it's just, like, a way to get players to not just be sitting around and, you know, yeah. like, still be in shape and stuff like that. So he played for the Montreal Royals, and he did okay. He wasn't, like, the best player. And actually, at that same time, there was another player who signed for the he like was the first black player to own to go into the American League, which is like another baseball team that later joins Major League Baseball. And he was quoted as saying that he was disappointed because Robinson wasn't even the best player in the Negro League and he shouldn't have been signed. And that's like really annoying because I'm like, you guys are barely being able to play. Like, you should be yeah. happy for whoever gets, like, black person gets to play. He played for 1 year with the Montreal Royals. He was batting average of 349. So he was doing, like, okay. And so from there, he the next year, or I think 2 years later, he was called up to play for the Dodgers, like, a few days before the season started. The Dodgers didn't, some players in the Dodgers didn't really like the idea of him coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of players said they would sit out rather than play alongside him, alongside Robinson. So the manager, Leo Durocher, told the team, I don't care if the guy is yellow or black or if he has stripes like a fucking zebra. I'm the manager of this team and I say he plays. Nice. He's like, what's more, I say he can make us all rich. And if any of you cannot use the money, I will see that you are all traded. Nice. So basically that put everyone in their place and everyone was like, all right, so I guess we're playing with Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
During his time there, he didn't do as well as he did in the minors. His batting average was like, it dropped down a little bit to 297, which is still like right below 300, but he wasn't doing as well. And he was also going from city to city, getting called, you know, the N-word, just... Like, the most, one of the things that they quoted was from the Philadelphia Phillies, like, the manager and the players in the dugout were yelling at him, like, the N-word, and yelling at him to go back to the cotton fields and things like that.
Yeah.
Just, like, horrible. Like, I would be, I don't know how he did it, but he won the inaugural Rookie of the Year award. He was an all-star player for six consecutive seasons between 1949 through 1954. He won the National League Most Valuable Player Award in 1949. All those awards, he was the first black player to be honored. He played in six World Series and contributed to the Dodgers' 1955 World Series championship. So then after that, a number of In, what is it, 1948, a number of other black players entered the major leagues. Larry Dobby was the guy who I told you basically said he wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
He entered Major League Baseball basically all because of Jackie Robinson and all the attention he was getting, and he was playing well. All these other teams started signing, you know, black players.
Yeah.
In 1949, Robinson turned to Hall of Famer George Sisler and asked him to help him with his batting because it had dropped. The year after he Sizzler helped him with his batting, it went from 296 to 342.
Wow.
So he started doing better. The other thing that started to happen was that he was starting to get attention from like Hollywood and, you know, things like that. I think it was like 1950. Yeah, they did the Jackie Robinson story, which was a movie which starred Jackie Robinson. And Ruby Dee played his wife, Rachel. In 1950, he also signed a contract with the Dodgers. He was the highest paid Dodger. Like, he signed a new contract, and he was making $35,000, which is $371,929 in 2019. And I think that was a year.
Nice.
So,
I could use that.
What's that?
I could use that.
Yeah, seriously. I could make that now and be okay.
Yeah.
He was pretty much well off, plus making movies and things like that. One of the owners of the Dodgers, Walter O'Malley, referred to Jackie Robinson as Ricky's prima donna. Basically didn't like Jackie Robinson. During the 1951 season, I think O'Malley basically sold off his portion of the team to Walter O'Malley. And Walter O'Malley took control of the Dodgers, and Ricky went off to become the general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yeah, so from here, it wasn't good for Robinson. There was a report that Walter O'Malley offered Jackie Robinson the manager position for the Montreal Royals, which was like the first team he started at as in the minors.
Yeah.
Which later was like not true. It was just kind of circulating in the news, so people weren't sure if it was like something that actually happened or something that O'Malley was just saying. Needless to say, that same year, Robinson led the team in double plays as a second baseman for the year, which was, I think, second year in a row where he was like the top player in that. Double plays is like when you get two outs. So like when the batter hits the ball, someone catches it, and you get two players out before anyone hits home. Or a base, I guess I should say. Basically, in 1955, he helped the Dodgers. Like, after that, like, he started to decline a little bit in, like, play. I mean, he had been playing forever at this point. Yeah, he was getting older. In 1954, he was still batting at 311, which is still good. But, obviously, he was dropping from his, like, you know, being in the 350s, 330s. He got replaced a couple times by other players in his position. A lot of it is viewed as like O'Malley not wanting him in the team, really, but he was also declining, so, and the other players were doing well. Mm-hmm. So, in his last year, 1956, he had a batting average of .275. He still had 12 steals, which seems like he did that like every year, but he was diagnosed with diabetes and lost interest in playing or managing baseball.
Yeah.
So he retired after the Dodgers won the World Series. After baseball, I believe he was like, he had like other jobs. He was a telecaster. He was the first black person to do that. He did it for ABC's Major League Baseball Game of the Week telecast. So he was like the first black person to be on TV as a sports announcer. He went into the whites only waiting room at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police asked him to leave. He refused. And he was basically kind of like an activist, like early on, before like like right before like the 60s, you know, where like it really started to pick up.
Yeah.
He was a board member of the NAACP. He had like conservative opinions about the Vietnam War. He like defended Martin Luther King. Like he just did a bunch of activist things.
He's
Which
had a legal
basically
path.
like yeah, which basically he was quoted as saying it's not like as like an athlete, it's like basically not what you do while you're playing the game, it's like what you do after.
Yeah.
And so he took pride in that like he basically wanted to be heard and wanted like equal rights, which is sucks that we're still
At that,
fighting for
yeah.
that. I'm like all like I don't know. It's just it's been like
Been
way
so
too
long.
long.
Yeah, I saw this. There was like a women's march. During one of the women's march, there was this woman who was like really old and she was holding up a sign that said, "I can't believe I'm still fighting for this shit."
Yeah.
And it's like true because she was like, they interviewed her and she was like, "Yeah, I was doing this back in the 60s and I'm still, it's like the same
Yeah, that's
problem
insane.
over and over." Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the same
Six,
thing.
it's like
So
60 years.
he would refuse to appear in like baseball events because he was protesting against the fact that there weren't any minority managers or people in like working for Major League Baseball that are minorities. His last appearance was on October 15th, 1972. He threw the ceremonial first pitch before Game Two of the World Series in Cincinnati.
Nice.
Yeah, he accepted a plaque honoring the 25th anniversary of his MLB debut, but also commented, "I'm going to be tremendously more pleased and more proud when I look at the third base coaching line one day and see a black face managing it in baseball." So he said that while he was accepting his plaque. So yeah, so he's just like a person that didn't hold back and didn't really like care about like saying what he felt.
Yeah, that's good.
Which at the time was like pretty early on, I think, for someone who was like a public figure to be doing. Yeah, so he basically got really sick from the diabetes later in life, and he was starting to go blind and just things that happen with diabetes, even though he was taking like insulin, but at the time it wasn't like a very good like the insulin we like people who have diabetes now use is a lot better than the one it was back then. So he was still basically getting sick and he had heart disease and he passed away on October 24th, 1942 of a heart attack in Stamford, Connecticut. He was 53 when he passed away.
Wow,
He's
young.
pretty young.
Yeah.
Baby, is
Cool
that?
things that happened afterwards. His number 42 is actually a retired number across all of baseball.
Really? So nobody
Yeah.
can have that number.
Nobody can
Wow.
have that number. It was in 1997, April 15, 1997, Robinson's jersey was retired through all of baseball.
Nice.
So,
That's cool.
there's actually a Robin Jackie Robinson Award. There's a Jackie Robinson Day for baseball. Yeah. I think it's April. Hold on, I have it written down. Yeah, so April 15th, this says, which started in 2004. So on that day, all the players use number 42 on their jersey.
That's cool.
Yeah.
In honor of Jackie Robinson.
so fascinating. So that
is Jackie Robinson. Oh, and Cool Things for Kijan. I said he portrayed himself in 1950 motion picture, The Jackie Robinson Story. There was also a television show called A Home Run of Love. There was a Broadway musical called The First. There was an off-Broadway production called Play to Win. In 1990, there was a TNT television movie, Court Martial of Jackie Robinson. 1996 HBO movie, Soul of the Game. 2005 episode of Cold Case called Colors was based on Jackie Robinson, and obviously the Chadwick Boseman 2013 42. Yeah.
Insane. I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I knew he was a baseball player, and that's that.
Yeah. Oh, there's also, I guess there's also a PBS documentary called Jackie Robinson that was directed by Ken Burns.
I was going to say the Ken Burns one. I was like, yeah. I know that one. Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx did the voiceover.
Nice.
So if you don't know about him or want to know more, you can watch all those things. They're probably more entertaining than me talking for like an hour.
It's funny, I did the report like you did back in like elementary school, and I don't remember any of it.
Yeah, I was remembering as I was like reading it, I was remembering certain things, but yeah, like I guess the main thing to take away is how he was like a like vocal about racial rights and rights for minorities and things like that.
Just
and
trying to play
he baseball. Basically paved the way for like a lot of people, you know. Got a lot of awards
because like being the
first person.
It kind of sucks too, because it's, you know, it's really, that is a difficult choice you have to make as like a public figure.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're making your money off of it, and if you say something to make people mad, then it's like, well, there goes your income, or there goes, like, you know, supposedly people are like, oh, you just ruined your career or whatever. And especially for him at that time.
Yeah.
That must have been really difficult to, like, not speak up and be like, mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, I just think it annoys me when you hear, like, people say to celebrities or just people who have, like a public figure saying like, oh, like I've heard people tell celebrities like, oh, when they say something, go stick to movies or stick to this. And it's like
your job.
Yeah. Like, no, they're Americans. Like they can say what they want.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like, that's their chance to, if they have a plot, not as their chance to speak on what they believe in. And also it's like, who the fuck are you? Like, what? Mm-hmm. I don't tell you to like, okay, go do your job as like, just go be an engineer. Like, no, you have the right to speak up and you know, no matter what your job is.
It also annoys me when people say, like, leave it to the politicians. And I'm like, well, the politicians haven't been doing a good job for, like, centuries. So, I mean,
they are our, like, their job is to serve us.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, that was really interesting. Thank you. I learned a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm muted because the baby's crying.
Oh, that's
little Noah.
Oh my god! You can hear him now.
What? You can still hear him.
What?
Yeah. I was muted.
It's fine. I guess as you were like unmuting and muting, it was just like.
Yeah. We just hear like.
He's not having it. He's having a rough day.
Yeah.
And work was rough today.
Yeah, work was rough.
where can they find us?
Find us on Instagram at Microwave Coffee Podcast, or email us at microwavecoffeepodcast@gmail.com. Email us if I said anything wrong, or if you know something else, or if you have a cool story or I don't know,
you know, you met him, you shook his hand,
hand,
you played Jesus. Baseball with him, you
if you guys ever have anything to add, please let us know, we'll bring it up. Well, anyways, all right. Well, thank you guys. We'll see you next
Thanks
week.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Could I get some more coffee?